Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, everybody, to the very first episode of The Psychologists Are In. I am Maggie Lawson.
And I'm Timothy Omelson.
And we're so excited about this podcast. I was Juliet O'Hara on the show for 8 seasons.
I was and am and always will be Head Detective Carlton Lassiter, except now I'm Chief Carlton Lassiter.
Chief Carlton Lassiter, that's right. And we are thrilled to go back and relive this wild, wonderful, beautiful, crazy, funny, emotional adventure that we all got to have together. On each episode of our podcast, we will go through an episode of Psych, sort of. We're also going to tell some funny stories and memories-ish, right? We're going to talk about the episodes, but we'll give some fun facts and all that. And we're going to chat with all of our best friends and our teammates and family members. Exactly. For our very first episode, we are so thrilled to have the one and only creator and showrunner of the show, Steve Franks.
No way. How did we get him?
I have no idea. How did we get so lucky? I don't know. So we're going to sit back and listen to how Psych became Psych.
If you know who's really lucky, our darling listeners out there, they're truly the winners here.
They're the most lucky. Oh, and just to clarify, we use the word psychos a lot. We are referring to our loving, wonderful, loyal Psych fans. They have been calling themselves this for a very long time. We call them this now as well. And it's basically like a family name, you know? So hopefully after listening to this podcast, if you weren't calling yourself a psycho already, you are now. Honestly, we're a family, but like there is this extended family now of the psychos and the Psych fans, and we're all kind of one because we are not us without them.
100%.
So this is for you guys, and Tim and I are having a grand old time reliving everything too, so it's for us too.
it's for everybody. It's mostly for us.
Right? It's mostly for us.
It's mostly for us. Used to hang out.
Yeah, and drink martinis. Okay, bye Tim!
Bye Maggie!
Hi guys. So a little backstory about The Psychologists Are In. For this very first interview with Steve, Tim was going to be a surprise. Well, he is a surprise. So that is why you don't hear from him for a little while. But Steve and I ended up talking for a pretty long time and a lot of fun stuff happened. And so we are actually going to break this episode up into two. So there's going to be a special mini episode for the rest of my interview with Steve Franks because there's just so much pineapple goodness in there, we have to share it with you. And going forward, it'll be all Amundsen all the time. Anyway, please enjoy our very first episode of The Psychologists Are In. Whenever I talk about Psych, I always say it's like lightning struck. There were just so many pieces that came together, that had to come together to make this really, really special thing. But the thing is, lightning didn't strike. There was a genius behind this show from the very, very beginning. And I am so excited to talk to him today. You guys, we have Steve Franks here, who is the creator of Psych, the one behind everything. And I am just going to pick his brain on every topic and all things Psych. Are you ready, Steve?
I am so happy and excited to be here. And you don't have to call me a genius at any point because that's overstatement.
No, it's not.
But I appreciate it in the introduction.
It's just like this whole thing has just been so special from the very, very beginning. And we've just finished Psych 3. our movie, and I've just been reflecting on it so much, just how all these things have come together. And we're going to go through every single episode on this podcast, starting with the pilot. So, Steve.
Yes, Maggie.
Let's start from the very beginning.
But here's the thing. You aren't there at the very beginning, so it's less interesting. So why don't we skip that part?
No. Well, okay, we can skip certain parts, but I want to hear how you came up with this idea, where it began, and then the whole process you had. But we'll go along. So start at the beginning. How did you come up with Psych?
Well, the germ of the idea came years before I ever met Kelly Kolchak, who is our great executive producer, and the original first person who was there, who said, oh my gosh, this is a great idea. But I wrote a movie called Big Daddy that got made. It was the first script that I sold. And that relates to, so I sold the script and it ended up getting made. It was exciting.
Big Daddy.
And then, yeah, Big Daddy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To Columbia, which was
huge.
Well, it wasn't huge. It was like, literally the former president of the studio, Sid Gannis, he liked the script. He bought it and they bought it. And it was the lowest of lowest priorities. And
that's amazing.
Years later, Kelly Kolchak went to work for Throughline, which is also Chris Hensie's company. And she's like, what do you have? And I said, well, I've always wanted to do a 1 hour. And I pitched a handful of half hours. And then at the end, the last one on the list was, well, I had this thing and it's called Fake Psychic Detective. And Kelly was like, oh my God, that's a show. And she even said it like that. Oh my God.
Cause that's how she talks. Oh my God.
Yes, exactly. All the time.
Oh, yeah. Kelly.
I did. That was not completely
it
accurate.
Was perfect.
But yes. But she really liked it. And Chris, of course, and I had gone in and produced a handful of shows that didn't make the air. But I was just excited that, oh, this is going to be a 1 hour show.
Yeah.
And it would be the first time I ever done anything with cops, which was cool for me because I grew up in a family of cops. So my dad and all of his brothers worked in law enforcement in one capacity or another. And I'd never even written a police officer into a show.
Wow.
So it was an idea of, you know, that people kept telling me, oh, you should do something with police. And I don't know, I don't want to do like a procedural thing. I would do something completely different. And so the idea of the, like, hey, fake psychic, that's pretty fun.
So Kelly signs off. She's like, yes, this sounds fantastic. And she's at Throughline. Chris is at Throughline. Then where does that go for you?
Yeah, so it went to, you know, you create a pitch and you create a pitch off the idea. And at the time, strangely enough, it was, you know, in the early 2000s, not the early 2000s, 2004 probably. Mm-hmm. And it was just it was the early days of the depressing murder mutilated body procedural.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't want to do any of that. And I thought, well, this will be the antidote, you know, because before it switches back to the shows I loved when I was growing up, because I loved Moonlighting and I loved Magnum PI and I loved light, fun 1 hours where the good guys get bad guys. And then you get to see the fun of it is to see their lives. And Magnum lives on this great estate in Hawaii. And David Addison is this unbelievable guy who just sits around the office, makes everybody laugh. And, you know, he's a good detective, but he's just wants to be funny and fun the whole time. So
those are the
things I was gravitating towards.
Right.
So I put together a pitch, and, you know, it stemmed out of, I go, well, what's my take personally on the cop show? And for me, it was that my dad wanted nothing more than for me to be a cop when I was growing up, like nothing more, like, you know,
and
so he, you know, he was like, it's a good job and you have insurance and benefits and all that stuff. And my dad, you know, was always driven by this idea of making the world a better place.
Your dad is so sweet. Your dad is the sweet. Your parents, they visited our set so many times. They were just like a part of it. They're so wonderful.
I know they were so bummed not to come up for this one with all the restrictions and all that. And my dad kept calling every week and saying, "Oh, they changed any of the border stuff." I go, "No, nope, Dad."
Aww. It was weird not having them there. It was weird, yeah. Or at least did not seeing them.
So that's why we have to, that's the number one reason we have to make another one.
Absolutely.
Just so my parents can come.
At least, five more. We'll just keep making them forever. But that is the main reason, yes.
Exactly.
So your dad, you have that sort of personal story and attachment to it, that your dad always wanted you to be a cop.
Yeah, and by accident, he used to, because as a cop, you know, he needed to work three jobs to sort of pay for the house and for all the kids and all that stuff.
Right.
So he would work security at Sears, and he would also take what they call side jobs. And one of them was security on movie sets. And so he would take me to this movie sets, and inadvertently, instead of inspiring me to become a cop, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do. I want to hang out on the set and all that. And so that's where my love of television came from, and movies and all of that. And, you know, I got to be on the set of Moonlighting. So, which was
really?
My favorite show on the world. Yeah. And
oh,
I mean,
that's
I wasn't
so cool.
You know, I'm just standing around and hanging out and watching it. And,
still,
and
but like when it's your favorite show.
Yeah. No. And it was so great, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm working this. What is this? Eddie Murphy movie. I'm like, oh my God, I'm down. You know, so I like, I would so immediately neat. Be, you know, drive down to Chinatown and come hang out on the set and, you know, see if I could see. And I it was funny because I like just kind of stayed in the corner. I didn't like try to go interact with anybody inadvertently, because I'm a giant ridiculous human being. People would notice me.
You're hard to miss. That's true.
Yes, exactly.
It's true. One of my questions actually for you was about the sort of comedy part of like bringing that into a procedural, because like you said, oftentimes like the cases and shows about a murder or just, you know, detective shows in general, whatever, bringing in that element of comedy, how did you get to like Sean Spencer and him being and Gus and, you know, obviously Lasseter and Juliet being, you know, we're the cops, but like this relationship and the funny and the crazy of the fake psychic?
Well, it always felt like, you know, that it needed to, it, cop shows are more fun with an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and you can do grizzled or, you know, disenchanted cop, and that's been done a lot, but you didn't yeah. see, you know, the especially the era of the private detective, which when I was very little was like, you know, Jim Rockford and the Rockford Files.
Yeah, totally.
And so you had this sort of history of the private eye who would come in, but the private eye was always like, usually it was someone walking into their office and they'd have to get hired. And I thought, is there a way we can intrinsically make someone who shouldn't be in the police station needed in the police station all the time?
Mm.
And so the psychic is something that some people do employ more on our show than
usual.
The history of reality.
Did your dad have any experience with that?
I don't think so. I don't think he ever dealt with the psychic.
Okay, in
that kind of way. But, you know, a lot of that was artistic license, and I put artistic in quotation marks. But it was a license then to create a character that didn't have to have any boundaries. And
totally.
That's why Sean should go to the extreme. And that's where it's just like, and for me, it's like writing should be fun and creating a show should be fun. And, you know, like working on a 1 hour television show, it's so hard. And people, when I first started telling them I wanted to write a 1 hour, they're like, you realize that's the hardest of half hours of movies. It's the worst schedule. It's the longest schedule. It's the hardest thing. And I'm like,
right.
yeah, I know. Don't never tell me what's bad.
No, but there is a lightness to our show. And just for people who don't know, usually I think procedurals shoot 8 day episodes, right? And we were shooting 7. Is that right? I think we even had like a shorter schedule. So we even had more work we had the same amount of work in a shorter amount of time to do it. So it wasn't even, it was going to be harder even than usual.
Well, and then we would hear about shows that like, yeah, we're doing 12 days and I don't know how we're going to do our visual effects. And I'm like, are you kidding us? We're doing it 7 days. And we would every once in a while get an 8th day as like a bonus deal.
It felt so cushy. Yeah,
I know. And we would split them between two episodes. So
it
could be there. And we did a Elsewhere musical in 14 days.
Unbelievable.
Which was the craziest of all the schedules. That was the one that I can't believe that none of us didn't go to the hospital or something for.
It was, but that was all you. And you blew me away on that. Just because from writing all the music to directing it. And I know we're not, this isn't the musical episode of the podcast, but that's just a, like a teaser for later.
It's a preview of, you know, The Psychologist is in episode 100.
Exactly. which is also something to celebrate. Okay. So how did the observational part of it, when it came to like Sean Spencer and how he was going to fool everybody in the skill that he has, was that something your dad did with you?
Well, and yeah, that was straight out of my dad, because my dad, in his constant wanting me to be a cop, was training me to be, was like, he always said, I'm a paid observer. And so he would always tell me like, okay, you know, we'd sit down for lunch and he goes, okay, what's your exit? You know, just in case there's a firefight or whatever that goes down. So, you know, and it also, I think it helped me too, becoming a writer, because I'm not an eavesdropper, but I notice conversations and things, and
it drives my characters of chairs yes. But yeah, of course you have to study people as a writer.
Yeah. And so I think it was straight out of my dad, who, you know, he says, if you know a room when you walk in, he says, how many hats are in a room? And I thought, oh, it's really cool. You know, and so wow. I put that in the pilot. And the great thing about it is, you know, when you go into a show, you have your pitch, and your pitch is your story. And you start with like a blurb about yourself. And then you say, okay, and now we're going to start the pitch. And then you start the story. And it feels very stilted to me when you do that, because it's like, okay, blah, 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 personal chatter. And now we'll talk about this story. And my pitch was seamless, because there's Finney right there. He's visiting.
Hi, Finney. I know I was going to have Peanut here today, but I was like, oh, maybe it's maybe for the first one, I won't have her, but I might have her for the others. Hi, Finney. Okay.
So he's here, but he can't hear you because of the headphones. Oh, now he's bored. So the great thing was, you know, my pitch was, I was telling the story about my dad wanting to be a cop. And then I started telling the story about how many hats in the room. And that's the first scene of the pilot. But the great thing about that is, I'm telling a story about my personal life, and he said, how many hats in the room? And I closed my eyes and it said three. And from there, and from that point, I was telling the story of the pilot of Psych.
Wow.
And it was probably like, you know, and Bill McGoldrick, who went on to become head of most everything's in the room, and is like, oh, wow, we're in the pitch. We're all of a sudden in the pitch. And it was such
amazing,
a seamless transition that I realized, oh my gosh, I've hooked these people, you know.
Wait,
which doesn't always happen.
When Kelly and Chris were on, so at Throughline, did you have like a list of places you were going to go, or was there? Did they have like a deal with it?
It was we went to. I'm sure we went to all the studios. Went to Fox, and the Fox pitch went pretty well. And Fox said, "Hey, let's make this a half hour." And I'm like, "I don't know how to do that. Right. That would be weird."
Right.
And one of the places I actually really wanted to go was USA Network because of Monk, because I liked watching Monk. And I said, here's a show that's kind of like ours that I thought we could pair with, which is, once again, talk things into existence. I had said, let's go to USA Network and then they can put us on right after Monk. And they ended up putting us on right after Monk.
It's a perfect pairing though. And Monk at the time, I felt like was something we kind of hadn't seen, because it was also an hour long. It was also more about the people and the relationships than necessarily, even though the cases were great, it was just so unique. And it was very funny, but not like sitcom funny. It was, I think, kind of the first time we saw maybe like the dramedy, I think was the word they were calling it at the time. Yeah. But like, yeah.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I was such a fan. And the greatest thing is Andy Breckman, who's the creator of the show, called me once we got picked up. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Andy Breckman. It's so excited to talk about it. Not to be the nicest guy, and just offered so much great advice without me ever having to ask, and was such a wonderful man and so great, and gave me so many tips about navigating the system that I never would have known to do.
Wow.
You know, at that point.
Do you remember any of them? Do you remember?
Well, he was instrumental in saying, let's say, you don't have to do all the stuff they're suggesting. People have to suggest things, you know? And so, you know, be able to look between that. And to me, it's like, In any process, I always say that it's a miracle that a show gets sold. It's a miracle that a script gets finished.
It's true.
It's a miracle that a pilot gets made. It's a miracle that there's every one of them is a miracle.
It is.
And if they
it
turn
really
out to
is.
Be good, that's just, you know, that you it's such a small percentage of any of those things. And I feel like, you know, for me, it's like, I always surround myself with great, great people. And I want to give them credit as often as possible because we've had some great executives. You know, people like to say, I hate our executives, you know, yeah. Whatever. We've had some great executives that gave me notes that like, oh yeah, that's right. Of course we didn't do that and all that stuff.
Right.
And we've gotten, you know, I'm not saying that the far percentage of notes were things that made all of us cringe, but
right.
You just find your ways around that, but you know, you look for the, all right, we didn't do that. Or, you know, yeah. Hey, listen, it would be great to explain all of those things over the course of the episode, but it's 42 minutes. And wouldn't you rather laugh and smile and see this character and do all that stuff, and we'll cover it, but we're going to fly by it quickly. And we're going to give the viewer enough credit that they don't have to hear the same thing repeated three or four times.
Right,
so,
right.
So for all that, Andy Breckman was just so amazing and nice. And I've never met the man face to face.
Really?
He works out of New Jersey, at a writer's room in New Jersey. And it just never worked out for our schedules ever being in the same place. So someday.
I love these stories. I love when the people who've helped us along the way, like he probably doesn't realize what an impact that had with you. And that there are these people kind of along the way. I do feel like we did have, from what I know, which was not what you know from like executives or whatever, but I do feel like we had some really loving, excited, creative people on our executive team. And like now that I've seen a lot of how shows get made and how lines can be drawn and that like, you don't necessarily always feel them as a part of the creative process. And I felt like we had like real fans, like our actual creators and the people who were, I mean, creators, executives who were involved were actual like fans of the show. Like it was really fun. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? I think everyone probably could answer yes to that question. I know I can. Well, that's where BetterHelp comes into play. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It is not self-help. It is professional therapy done securely online. There is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly or video phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline therapy, and financial aid is even available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit BetterHelp.com/pineapple. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. And join the over 2 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Special offer for the Psychologists Are In listeners. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/pineapple. That's 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/pineapple.
And the funny thing is, you know, I hired a handful of people, and our two lowest writers were Anupam Nigam and Andy Berman.
Who was the lowest level? That's so crazy.
Yeah, our two lowest level writers were, and Anupam was just such a funny, it was just such a funny interview. It's like, I knew I had to hire him right on the spot. And his dad wanted him to be a doctor. And so he had this sort of totally different experience But the in life, but we were tied by these two things. And Andy Berman had written, was an actor who was on the Wonder Years, played Chuck and was in a lot of movies. Well, and he was the one that's like, he's my choice. This is my, these two guys are my choice.
That's one of my questions was like, who were your like dream people? Okay, cool. So from day one. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they had, you know, and then the studio wanted us to get some seasoned people who knew their way around the procedural. And you know, and then I think after the first year, it's like, oh, well, hold on. Maybe we'll just go with these guys that are crazier. So we ended up fortifying our staff with the tone that ended up becoming the show. But people, you know, and so we would have a fairly small writer's room, but it's like, you know, everybody was welcome to pitch ideas. It's the assistants, you know, the script supervisor, and, you know, our script supervisors and assistants ended up writing episodes for us. And, you know, and
that's right.
But it was always about, this show has a different tone. The tone is wish fulfillment. And each episode starts with the world. And the world is the important thing, whether it's the world of the spelling bee, whether it's the world of American Idol, or it's, you know, it's we're going to do Indiana Jones this week. It should all come from some place of like, oh my God, I want to do that. You know, and so it's about wish fulfillment. So that was always
so cool.
It should be fun. What we're doing is fun.
That's how it always felt. It always felt like an adventure. Every episode felt like an adventure. Also, I'm noticing the Indiana Jones pinball machine, as you said, Indiana Jones in the background, which you said, I did ask you about this early on, but now that we're recording, you bought this with when you got Big Daddy?
It was my one extravagant purchase between Sullivan Patterson and I. We don't consider ourselves cheap. We just don't like to waste money in terms of that. But it was the one purchase I made for myself.
Like, I'm buying this.
I got to have this. And I used to, when I wrote, I would get stuck. And whenever I got stuck, I would drive down to the arcade and play pinball. And it forces you, a little silver ball coming at you, forces you to get out of your own head.
Yeah.
And almost every time I would solve the problem while playing some silly pinball machine.
So it's a magical pinball machine.
It's a little bit magical. Yes, exactly.
I love this. I love that. I mean, I feel like writers often like kind of talk about whatever they have to do to sort of get out of their head for a minute. But Indiana Jones pinball, I think, is the coolest one I've ever heard.
I think it's my favorite. And then the other thing we used to do in the writer's room is I would say, let's get the room on its feet. And we would just go for a walk. And our offices were in Manhattan Beach.
Yeah.
And we would just walk. And the first 20 minutes, you don't get anything done. And sometimes it's hot and people are like, oh, why are we doing this? But after you get going, we just keep walking. And suddenly it's like, oh, hold on. What about this? And we would come up with so many episode ideas or solve episode problems or realize the episode we were trying to write is a terrible one and change our mind.
So I want to talk casting now from the beginning. So you write your pilot. So who helped you write the pilot? Was that that's just you, right?
That was just me, yeah.
Yeah, that was just you. So you pitch, you go, like, you pitch a couple people or whatever, and they, McGoldrick is like, oh, we're in the pitch. You're like, we're cruising. This is my guy. And then USA, we land at USA. Were there any other contenders, or was it just like, no, this is our home?
It was pretty much our home. It was, right. Like I said, there was the Fox thing of like, hey, you want to make this a half hour? And like, yeah. But I don't tend to get like, because what I do is pretty specific. It isn't usually like a townwide bidding war.
Right. Right. Like, but like, it's never that. It's never a townwide bidding war. But I do feel like there was, I can't even imagine psych anywhere else. So it makes sense that it would just be like, no, it's USA. Cause that's where
and,
we're going to live.
And pretending it's my choice right now, but
it was your choice, Monk. It was the perfect pairing.
It's true. But it's like, sometimes whenever I pitch something, I'm like, oh, why would we go to them? Because they don't do this. And they would probably want to change it, or they're not going to want to do. So I like to target, you know, this place will do what we want.
Right.
We're bringing them this show, and they would want this show. And
right.
I don't feel like shoehorning this into the CW is going to be good for anybody.
Right.
And like I said, the mantra is it has to be fun. It can't be, and so many people you say it's miserable. We're getting all these, all this pressure. It has to be fun. Because that's the only way you're going to make a great show.
That was the tone. Okay, so now we're going to USA, or you're making a pilot for USA. Is the next move then casting?
Yeah, well, we wrote the script and we figured that.
Oh, you sold the pitch, right?
Maybe, okay, so you sold the pitch. I had to have them send me a 1-hour TV drama script because I'd never seen one.
Oh my God,
life.
Really?
Because I knew that the formatting is so different for a half hour or for a feature film. And I'd written feature films and I'd written half hours, but I'd never done a 1-hour.
What, so do you remember what script they sent you?
I got a whole bunch of them, but I got some monks. I got a few monks and those were fun. And then I got some old strange stuff. I think I got some 4400s, which really didn't apply to anything that we were doing. But I just wanted to get the format right and pretend like, oh yeah, I know exactly how this goes.
I love it. And so you sold this on a pitch.
So we sold it on a pitch. We went in the room, we wrote the script. And then I remember I was at the movies and then I got a call from Jackie DeCrenis who said, hey, we're gonna make this thing. And I was, I don't remember what movie it was, but I was bummed because I didn't go back into the movie. Cause at this point I'm like, I was too excited to do that, But I was like, oh my God, now it's like, how am I going to do this?
Right.
So the script was really, well received. So they said, we're going to make a pilot and we went into the casting process and they gave us, they make their list of names of people you're not going to meet. You're not going to have read. They're just, they're just names.
Offer
of people
only who, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Offer them the show and they'll do
right,
it. And
right.
Some people it's like, oh, we really like this person. We met some like some really, cool, funny people.
Do you remember anybody?
I don't know. And I get confused my first show, but I know that every once in a while in the garage, I'll find like notes, casting notes. And I'm like, oh, I was so stupid. But I remember, it was either for this or my NBC show and Kevin Hart had come in.
Oh, wow. Really?
And I wrote, hey, this guy's funny. Like I'd figured this out. Like, hey, this guy's funny. Like,
oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. You were like, by the way, I just discovered somebody. Like he's
funny.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's like, amazing.
Nobody else in the room would have figured this out, but this guy is funny.
But this guy knows his comedy. He knows his comedy. Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so you met with some people.
We met with some people, and the lists were there were some interesting names, but once again we were basic cable, and this was at the cusp of USA's really successful run. So it wasn't like the best idea, the most exciting idea in the world for actors to come do a basic cable show.
Right. Right. At the time, especially. Right.
But for me, it's like, I was like, wait a minute, we do only 16 episodes of this. And we get all this freedom to do this.
Yeah.
We have a studio and a network that I'm like, sign me up. I never want to do a network thing.
Right.
So we ended up meeting, just starting casting, and James came in pretty early on. And the first time we met him, he had this big shaggy mountain man beard.
Oh, that's so funny.
He did. I think he was a little more reserved than usual. Yeah.
He is though. It's interesting. Like personality, like he is reserved. I think when people meet him sometimes, they're kind of surprised at how reserved he is just because of, Sean Spencer is not at all.
Yeah, it was. And it was, and I'm like, okay. So I'm like, but when he said the words, he was like 70% of what he would end up doing.
Right.
But he was still reserved even in the performance. But I just like, this guy's really funny. Let's bring him back in. And so he was one that was on the list. And then we had a handful of people like, oh, this person's pretty good. And our casting person was like, all right, well, you should have this because the network loves this person. I'm like, okay.
Right.
So, and this is me in casting. I'm the worst person with casting because I said this to you and like, I think about it. This person read my sides, learned these words, picked out an outfit, got ready, drove down here, sat in that waiting room, got validation for parking. And they walk in and, you know, it's so easy. People go, nope. And I'm like, well, let's just see. So I always talk to the actors. I always see like, you know, is this person have something in them? Before we ever hear the words, I want to know, you know, what's happening with this performance. And
yeah,
whether it's just like, hey, wow, you did the Nestle Quick commercial and that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Or hey,
yeah,
you know.
That's so nice though, Steve, by the way. A lot of people don't think that way.
It's nice from my side, but it drives everybody else in the room crazy because it's like, we're 40 minutes behind.
But it's so nice. I don't know, like that kind of just awareness and care and all of it. It's really special.
Well, and also, you know, it's like, we always had the no a-hole policy, but I always say we have a no, I don't want to, because if I'm going to have to be with these people, and I always said, we're going to do 5 years. I said, if I'm going to have to be with these people every day or, you know, interact with them, I want someone who's really special as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather have an actor, you know, if there's an amazing actor who's an a-hole, it's not worth it. And it disrupts the flow and the fun of everything else. So
totally.
For me, it was like just as important to know, oh, wow, this person's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so we would start the words and talking with James. I'm like, oh, okay, I love this guy. He's great. And so James came in again. And then the second time, he was just off the charts. Unbelievable.
Is that the video we've seen? I think it's a part of one of the DVD extras.
That was further down the line. But it was funny because once we cast James, he would come in to the casting sessions and he would read with people just to read, especially with the Gusses. He read with most of them.
He's such a generous actor. I mean, that does not surprise me at all from the very beginning. But yeah. Okay. So that was did he have to like network test and all that stuff? And like, okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. We were right. we're like, this is the guy. Can you know, I was like, this guy's a movie star. This guy is, you know, and they're like, we have our process, you know? So we brought in, you know, you have to bring in like four, which I think is like the worst kind of thing that actors have to go through, is like, there's three other versions of you, no matter what.
The testing process is so much.
It's just so hard. And then you go in the parking lot and sign your life away for the next 7 years before you ever go to sit in that room.
It's true. I mean, people don't know that, you know, when you tell the story, they're like, wait, what? You're testing? I'm like, well, yeah, but technically, like, I've already signed the contract. But they can decide at that point if they want me or not. I just, like, if they decide it's me, I've now committed for, as you said, 7 years, not yet, however long the contract is for. It's kind of a wild experience. You know all of that going into a test room, like your episodic fee, how much you're going to make, then how many years it's, you know, most of them, I think, standard are 7 years. It might be different now with cable, but yeah, so you have all that kind of like writing on it as well when you go in the room, because then you start calculating, you're like, 7 years, I'd be making what? And I go, wow, okay, all right. So it's such a wild process, and it's still kind of the process. It's still what they do. Okay, so he comes in, he clearly gets it.
He does it. And then Dulay was on our list because West Wing was ending.
Right.
And so, we just loved him as a dramatic actor. I didn't know him as, I hadn't seen the Corn Pops commercial yet. So, we knew he was on Broadway and we knew all that stuff.
Right, right.
But Dulay was of a stature that he didn't have to read. He wasn't required to read. So we just said, let's just get a meeting with him. And so we came in for the meeting and we loved him. We were talking to him and they're like, oh, this guy would be so great. And it's like, oh my gosh, you think he can do it? And then at the end, he's just like, should we read this? And I'm like, okay.
Dulay said that?
There we go. Yeah.
Oh, so I love it.
It was a matter of, you know, I think we were just feeling each other out as human beings. And he and James did it. And it was like, oh, wow, this is something. You know, and they had a really nice banter and flow. And then we did it again. And then they started to play. And the whole character of Gus suddenly starts to appear, you know, in that moment.
When you had the script, they read, they test, then you see their chemistry together. Did you go back and rewrite anything? Did anything change character-wise after meeting them and being like, oh, they've brought this like this other thing now? Or did that just slowly evolve in the episodes?
Well, I think as we were going, it definitely did, especially once we got to the pilot. So we started adjusting because it's like, oh, well, Dulay does this and he does that. And then James does this and James does that. And, you know, you're fitting it. But the core of who the characters were never changed.
Right.
They they embodied, you know, they just built upon and expanded upon and gave this complete life to everything that they did. And we're like, oh my gosh, he does that super well. So we're going to do that.
With HelloFresh, you get fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. The holidays can be hectic, but HelloFresh keeps things simple with recipes and ingredients that cut out grocery shopping and limit meal prep time so you can spend more of the festive season with your friends and family. HelloFresh offers 50 menu and market items to choose from every single week, including vegetarian, calorie smart, and gourmet options, providing plenty of variety. Ingredients travel from the farm to your door within a week, so you get the convenience without skimping on the quality. HelloFresh isn't just for meals. Their marketplace features a variety of add-ons for breakfasts, desserts, and seasonal snacks like Pillsbury pumpkin cookie dough. HelloFresh offers the flexibility you need to easily customize your order on the app within minutes. Easily change your delivery day, food preferences, and plan size, or skip a week whenever you need. HelloFresh makes the holidays easier. Your weekly delivery is made to help you cut back on meal prep and cleanup, and their limited edition holiday boxes deliver everything you need to cook up a family feast. No planning necessary. I have to say, I just used HelloFresh for the first time, and I love it. I love it so much. I just tried it recently. It was exactly what it said. It took me the same amount of time it said for prep, and the food was so, so good. I was actually like really impressed, and I am not a cook at all. Go to HelloFresh.com/pineapple14 and use code pineapple14 for up to 14 free meals and 3 free gifts. That's HelloFresh.com/pineapple14 and use code pineapple14 for up to 14 free meals and 3 free gifts. I was going to say, which character do you think you're, like, do you most identify with? Or was there any sort of like, oh, this is more me? Or
it's funny because I always say that the character is actually a split of my personality because I'm as cautious and thoughtful as Gus is. But I also am always looking for fun the way that, right, that Sean is.
Yes, I can totally see that.
So I'm not as bold as Sean is, and I'm not as smart as Gus is. But I possess many of the characters. And I also, most importantly, I possess the super smeller because
that's one of my questions.
There we go.
Was as I was watching through the pilot again and then into Spelling Bee, I have so many little isms of like the blueberry, the super smeller, like who was like, yeah, that's Gus's car and that's going to be the car for like 8 seasons. And we're going to call it the blueberry. And also the super smeller is just such an interesting trait. I also have a super smeller.
Well, there we go. So there you go. Yes. So it's a curse, right?
It's a curse. And especially when you're like, what is that? And nobody else knows what you're talking about. But I just never had a name for it until Psych, where I'm like, it's a super smeller.
And if there's someone next to me with like too much cologne or perfume, it's like it's torture. We'll be walking our dogs and we'll be walking. There's like a condo area. And I'm like, someone's making like garlic bread upstairs. And it's like you can
suddenly you're like, I want Italian for dinner.
Oh my gosh. And this is where I'm like the guys, it's like those scents I'm like makes me hungry all the time. So when I smell food and I smell food all the time.
Yeah. So no, this is so funny. So okay, so that's part of your personality. So the super smeller in Gus was actually you.
I think a lot of my personality stuff goes into Gus. I'm also the vault of secrets, is that that Tim Eltrigger always says, one of our writers, he says, like, wait, you didn't tell anybody that? And I go, you told me not to tell anyone.
Oh my gosh.
He's all, but yeah, but like you could tell your wife, you know, and I'm like, well, you said this is in confidence, and it, you know, and I'm never like burdened with like stories of someone murdering something or someone. But if someone says, hey, keep this to yourself, okay, then you just said keep it to yourself, so I'll keep it to myself. But
that's, by the way, an amazing trait. That's a great, just a person, a human friend, like that is such a nice thing.
Well, thank you.
And very rare, I feel like, in our business and in this town.
Yeah, well, maybe I just forget. Like, oh yeah, I should have spilled the beans about that.
I have to apologize for keep looking down at my phone a few times. There's a little surprise for you will be arriving very soon. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll just keep talking, and then the surprise will soon appear.
I'll keep things moving forward then too until we get there.
Let's invite your surprise.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm excited.
Let's see.
I thought it would, for a moment, was coming to my house because I heard my dog bark.
Oh, no. Well, wait a minute. I think it's definitely.
I think I see what it is.
Yeah. Hold on. He's connecting to audio. Wait, there's let's see your face. Hold on. Connect to video. Chief Lassiter.
If this is who I think it is.
it would be weird if you didn't know who it was at this point. But
Well, it could be someone just using the nickname.
Yay!
Oh, my goodness.
And Allison, hello there. Hi, Tim.
Hey, guys. What you doing? You guys playing cards?
Yeah, we're just hanging out.
We're just hanging out doing something. That's a nice hat you have there.
That's an amazing hat.
The coolest rap gift ever for the coolest psych movie ever, I think.
Yeah.
Granted, we haven't seen 5 yet, but all I know is that 3 was beyond all hopes and dreams.
We're going to see 10, hopefully.
And I haven't even seen it yet.
So Tim... I have been talking. Hi, Tim, which is kind of perfect because we actually were just going through all this whole process of like how Steve came up with Psych and characters. And we were about to sort of get into the pilot. Obviously, I wasn't in the pilot, but
had I known, I would have not done the pilot out of protest.
Wait, do you know what's amazing? And it actually times out perfectly because we just talked about casting James and we talked about casting Dulé. Mm-hmm. But it was Tim who came in and he was the one, who right off the bat within the room, they were ready to hire him at the studio network test. But he was in Down With Love. And I remembered that. And I go, I remembered him in that, and then his read of Lassard from the first words he said was so spectacular and so funny. And like, this is the guy. We knew it was going to be him.
Yes. And it was the interrogation scene of the first time Lassard hauls in Sean. So I hadn't gotten the script. I just got that scene. So I'm like, oh, it's a cop show. So I put on my blue cop suit, went to the audition, saw a bunch of my old friends sitting in the waiting rooms in their blue cop suits. And so I go on to see, Steve Kelly and Chris and our casting director. And as I'm about to start, Steve goes, hey, just so you know, it's not moonlighting. It's not NYPD Blue, it's moonlighting. And I was like, okay.
We talked about just now earlier in the recording that it was one of his favorite shows growing up. And then he also, his dad was a security guard and was doing work on moonlighting. So we actually got to go and watch moonlighting being filmed, so it's like it keeps moonlighting keeps making its way
full circle.
Yeah.
Thank God I told you right then, but yeah, I probably should have told you the second you walked in the door.
Yeah, but it was as I was about to start my first line, you told me that. I was like, oh, okay, great, because I actually watched Moonlighting as a kid and really loved it. I was like, I could do moonlighting. A million people can do NYPD Blue. Like anybody can do Tough Cop, but. Comedy cops a little tougher. So then I did it. And I just remember feeling so good in the room and you guys being so supportive. Like I literally said, I'm going to get the hell out of here before I screw this up. And then ran out the door.
You have that worry though, as an actor sometimes when you're like, when you've done it and you're like, man, I was in the zone. Like that was good. And then there was like this banter after and like, you want to talk and you're like, yeah. I don't want my personality to mess this up. So let me get Steven, out of the room.
Steven and Kelly were like, that was it. You nailed that. And like, oh, I gotta go.
I gotta go.
I gotta go.
Let me not say another word.
That's Chris Henze calls that because I'll do that after a really good pitch. Mm-hmm. And I'll just keep talking. And Chris is like, take yes for an answer and leave right now.
Such good advice.
Why are you still selling it?
It's funny. So when I was talking to Tim yesterday too, he said to me that he's like, it's so funny. I remember the day Steve Franks called me and said, I got it. Like it was yesterday.
Yeah, I remember the phone call. I was on, I was right near the Westfield Mall for some reason, seeing a call from you. So I pulled over because I was responsible and wasn't on the phone while I was driving. This was right after the test. And Steve gave me the good news. It's like, you know, I'm not Hollywood. I'm not a Hollywood guy. I don't live there. This is going to be super fun. It's all about fun and family. And I was like, count me in, man.
That's awesome. I can't believe I said that.
From the beginning.
You know, I'm so Hollywood.
He just said, it's kind of amazing. Like, now that I think about how this whole thing came together and also where we are. I mean, we're still doing it. Where it's not even just like, let's talk about this adventure we had. We're still having it, which is unreal. And I think, like, listening to you, Steve, talk about this other part of, like, no a-holes allowed. And, like, it really was...
And yet I still got in.
That's how good of an actor you are, Tim.
You know, speaking of the time frame, so on the third movie, not spoiling anything, there's that, there happened to be that first amazing day in that group scene when all of us were there.
It was the best.
Were trying to do the math of, like, how long we'd all been involved in this project. What was the final math on it?
Well, it's, I mean, Steve said 2004 is when he first came up with, like, when he started developing Psych. I came on 06. Go ahead.
Oh, no, no. Well, I mean, for you guys, for it was October 2015, it would have been the when we shot the pilot, because
2005.
Oh, 2015. No, it's 2015. See, but I told you I'm going to do
like 15
a lot
years, 16 years.
Yeah, I'm starting to do the math. Right. Yeah, no, 2005, which gives us not 15, but 16 years at this point. And yeah, so that's just from you guys. And I think, yeah, I must have come up with it in 2004, pitched it in 2005.
Because the hat says established 2006.
Well, that's
that
when
we premiered.
Yeah.
We premiered in July of 2006. So, but they said, hey, you know, the best time to shoot a movie set in the summer in Santa Barbara is in October, November in Vancouver.
One of my questions for you, Steve, was like, do you remember any stories just from making the pilot that, because I mean, I can see breath in a lot of the, in a lot of the shots,
so
like, and then rain at one
so
point.
Much.
Yeah, there's like a lot, but I, yeah, if there was anything element wise, also Santa Barbara. Like, it's such an interesting location for a cop show.
Like the Main Street.
Yeah, the Main Streets of Santa Barbara. But I feel like that must have played into your comedy sort of lighter side of all this.
Well, I mean, it was, once again, it goes back to being fun and hiring fun people and all that stuff. And I grew up and we would go vacation in Santa Barbara. That was instead of Hawaii, that was what we had, you know? And so we would go up there and I love that place. And now he said, oh, I want to have a house up here. And you know, someday, which I don't, but I still like to visit there. Yeah, exactly.
And the network was just like, yeah, Santa Barbara. Great. It's going to shoot in Vancouver. Because
well,
that
they
makes
did.
Sense.
They came to me like right away and they said, okay, about the Santa Barbara thing. And I'm like, yeah, you love it, right? You know, because I'm this green idiot. And they go, what about Seattle? And I'm like, Seattle? And like the only thing I remembered Seattle from was from a show called, oh no, it wasn't even Seattle. The only thing I remember from the Pacific Northwest was a show called Hello Larry when I was like 3 years old with McLean Stevenson.
It's amazing. So, you can remember something from when you were 3 years old.
I'm surprised you didn't reference Medicine Ball, one of my first series from shot in Seattle. Steve.
Oh, there we go.
Amazing Medicine Ball.
Yeah. So, or maybe it was, you know, Twin Peaks was shot like somewhere in that region.
Mm-hmm.
And Northern Exposure probably. At that point, but I was just like, well, you know, the idea is it's beautiful and fun there. And, you know, and they're like, all right. So they said, we have one place where there's palm trees and that was White Rock, which is right next to the border, which is the place we shot the last day of the Psych movie 3. And it was an amazing and beautiful day. And it was just Tim and Corbin. And and James and Dulé were there that last day.
That's right.
But it was a magical, great day. And then I drove straight to across the border that night.
Oh, that's right. You went to Seattle, right?
Yeah. I went to Seattle across the border. I was the only person at the border station. I drove like I took a cue from Tim, who every season would drive his car up rather than fly in and enjoy the majesty of the Pacific Northwest in that drive. And we did it. And it was fantastic driving home.
It's so beautiful. We did that a few times. And Tim, we'll probably get to this in a different episode, but I was thinking yesterday about the speeding ticket that I got while we were driving to our, which I actually do think may have, was that during Spelling Bee? Was that during, like, it was early, I know.
It was early on.
We did gun training. And just because we were like, I mean, I felt, anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. But just to stay on the pilot for a second, just because, like, I rewatched the pilot. It's, you know, pilots can be a little bit like, we're setting up this relationship, we're setting up that relationship, we have to now set up the whole show or whatever. This was like, like from day one, the Sean and Gus chemistry, like Lasseter and James go, like the Henry Sean stuff, like all of it was just so there immediately.
What was so great about that is that there was this great thing that happened on Tim, and Tim will, can talk to this, but Tim came in, knew every single one of his lines, and was back to front. But what he didn't know is that the whirlwind of James Rodet. And so he comes in for the tests, and they come in together, and James is completely off book, and prepared Tim now had to, well, I'll let you go from there, Tim, because.
Yeah. So it actually, so I was so freaking furious at this guy. Like I was wanted to kill him. And, you know, I've got for those who don't know, a test situation is incredibly stressful. I go and I do my first pass at it, and I walk out of the room just full of beans and ready to just like want to. And they came out to give me notes, and they're like, okay, hey, we think, like that was great. You're awesome, obviously, but we think we're worried you might be a little, something like a little too soft to be the authoritarian in this relationship. So can you go in with a little more heat? And I was like, watch this.
Oh my God.
So so James really gave me an incredible gift in that audition by wanting, because I went and just wanted to kill him. And the scene is like, as Lasseter is so aggressive in that scene that I wanted to pin him up against the wall, which he's so much heavier than me. There was one scene one time where early on when like Lasseter was trying to manhandle Sean. Oh, it was the scene in the kitchen, I think. It was one of the main times. And I was like, dude, help me out here. Because you outweigh me by a good solid 70 pounds of muscle. Tell me if you not look like a piece of spaghetti. So in that audition, I didn't have to luckily manhandle him, but I think I pushed him against the wall with my voice, and I was so angry. And then afterwards, I came out like, okay, that went well.
That's so funny. There's a really funny moment in the pilot where you have him. Wait, you have him up against the cop car, like up against the door at the very end. And I was like, it's so funny because you are pushing him so hard to get in there. By the way, I feel like a lot of the physical stuff we did on the show was actually like bones were broken. I know Dulé when he slapped Sean up and then they slap each other a few times. Yeah. Those were real. Wait, Steve, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, leading right up to it, you asked about the Vancouver in that time of year. And there was, And that leads right to a Tim story, because that entire scene, Lasseter throws Sean to the ground, and there was about an inch of snow on the ground.
Oh my God.
It was supposed to be in the middle of the summer. And we had people with hair dryers melting the snow, and we were shoveling and melting the ice. But that didn't mean that the ground wasn't still frozen solid. And Tim going down the ground, you would think that the sound of two human beings falling to a little grassy area is kind of generally kind of nice and soft. But it was like they just dropped onto the ice sheet in the Arctic. And do you remember, Tim, how cold and hard that ground was?
Oh. I do. I was more focused on trying to pick up James. One point, I think I like had him around the waist and just hoisted him with everything, and his little legs went up.
Oh, that's funny.
And that was the thing at the beginning, the studio and everybody, they loved James's psychic freakouts, you know? So they wanted this big Jim Carrey physical thing.
Right.
That James was like, yeah, okay, I'll do a little of that. But James is always like, what am I going to do new the next time?
How did you write out like, Sean has, did you have in your head like what a psychic episode looked like? Or was that like James just being like, all right, I guess I'm going to flail around and throw myself at walls. And like, I mean, even the first couple that happen in the pilot, like it's, and the music too, like the first Sean vision is actually young Sean in the diner, and the music like was already kind of established. It's so good of this like we're figuring something out, and it's got this whole beat to it. And I was like, how did the whole Sean vision thing come to be the like elaborate, I mean, some of the, especially like Nine Lives, like some of these in the beginning of Bend and Stretch and Chinatown and like all these how much of that was sort of, did you see, and how much of it was like Rodet? I'm sure it was a combo of both, but.
Well, I think when I write, I break the, you're supposed to, when you write scripts, I think you're supposed to just say, you know, walks in the room, sits down, and you're supposed to keep, be very specific about, right. But I'm always trying to entertain the person who's reading it.
So and you do.
I get a little flowery. And I, every time you see Henry in his hairpiece, I would always say Corbin Burson looking resplendent with a full head of hair. And there was always this flowery description of Corbin with the wig on, which is kind of a terrible wig for most of the time.
Oh, that's so funny.
But I think I might have overwritten just to entertain you guys. And then it may have, you know, James, of course, takes these things and runs with them. But I'm sure I said, you know, the most extravagant psychic vision in the history of the world. And James really made it sing and swell. And then poor Tim had to be the one trying to restrain him from this big piece of physical activity.
Oh, you guys were so good together. Everybody was so, I mean, just like the, even the first scene when we meet Gus at work and like, it just, all of it was so there. Like it was just psych. I mean, pilots are always so, I mean, I know there were some changes going into episode two, but I want to hear like when you shot the pilot, you go to edit it, you're like waiting for the network notes. Like, I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing any of those or if there was anything you had to lose that you absolutely loved, but then like how long from wrap editing, turning it in, getting your notes, like, and then to like getting it picked up was that process, and then the changes that kind of had to be made. Because it does feel a little different going into like Spelling Bee, just a little. Like, we don't meet Sean making out with a girl. We don't like, there is the big motorcycle thing though.
So I think in the script, it was like, he's got a V rod. And I'm like, what are you talking about? No, this guy should be on an old Norton or a Triumph. Uh-huh. But I think it did actually become a Norton.
I think it was at your suggestion. Yeah, because it was always about the car. I always thought, okay, you know, for, you know, Starsky and Hutch was about their car, you know, and so they always had, and Jim Rockford had a crazy, cool car. So it was always about, okay, so this guy rides around on a motorcycle and I'm like, oh, this will be fun. And I wrote probably the wrong one. And Tim's like, give it this one. And I go, thank you. See, this is why everybody can have a great idea. Bring something to the show.
I love this.
I really love that idea. James did not like the idea of the motorcycle and not only hated riding around on it. You know, even when we gave him lessons on it, and then he didn't like having to carry the helmet, and we had to track where the helmet was. And you know, the magnificence of James Roday's hair cannot be compromised by helmetry. So we had to.
Most of the time, when you say riding around on a motorcycle, most of the time, wasn't it like strapped to the back of a truck?
Yeah. Well, and by the way, that's uncomfortable and not that fun, but I always thought it would be cool. And in the script, it was just Gus had the company car and, you know, and we didn't think about a Blueberry or any of that stuff.
Right.
We went to the studio and they had three cars outside and they go, hey, we have some cars. And then two of them were like relatively normal cars. And then the other one was this blue monstrosity that didn't even exist in the United States. It was like a Canadian version of, I think the equivalent was like a Yaris at the time.
Oh, right.
And we were like, what is that? And it was like, well, I guess that's got to be the car because we don't even know what this thing is. And it wasn't called the Blueberry until we did American Duos in the second season.
Tim Curry, right?
Yeah, Tim Curry. Oh, right. Said, I feel like I've been incarcerated in a Blueberry. And it's like, oh my gosh, well, that's it.
Best lines.
Blueberry.
Tim, I want to talk about going into like episode two, Spelling Bee, and which is funny because actually Spelling Bee is when I do my audition episode, which is audition scene with James at the diner. And but we shot that a little bit later because Speak Now was actually the first episode we shot back after the pilot. And that's where Tim and I met because Tim and I had the first scene on the very first day of the series. So it was actually Tim and I who started the day on day one. And I was like, what is happening? I'm playing a detective? Like, this is like, what's going on?
Although, you know, Max, I wasn't in that first scene with you and James. I was on the set that day, but you and I didn't have any lines together.
Yeah, but that wasn't what the first thing we shot. The first thing I shot, no, was it?
No, the first thing you and I shot together was
walking into the now. Was walking into the church. Yeah, but yeah, you were at the diner on Spelling Bee. It's just funny because like we had already shot like chemistry stuff, like, and we'll get into that like the next one, because even like that scene, I loved that scene, that diner scene, so much when I read it originally in the audition, to the point where I was like, did he just write this for the audition? Because I really hope I get to do this scene if like we go. And then it was like right there at the top of Spelling Bee and How We Met, because we were on a How We Met Juliet and Sean. Actually, is that the first time we see Juliet? I think it is.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Absolutely. It's so crazy.
And it was written just for the audition.
Oh.
And so
I kind of thought, you know, that.
And so, but it was, I loved it so much that I'm like, well, I just want to stick this in the show. And you were so good in it. And it was like, well, clearly clearly this has to have a life somewhere else. And it was just perfect and fun and all already done, which makes it,
which is your favorite kind of scene.
It's the best kind of scene.
I feel like we just got through like Psych being where Psych came from and the pilot. And I want to have you back for more of the how the episodes kind of unfold. But I feel like today,
before you get to that, you were talking about how the chemistry on the pilot was just set.
Yeah, please.
So yes, it, like the pilot was just sort of like a done package all wrapped up in a bow, which we didn't realize we were missing a very important element. Because then you came on the show and we're like, all of us were like, oh my God, this Ray of Sunshine, this is the missing piece of puzzle
piece. Aw, Tim. But
there was, like, you came in and just, it really, it so solidified everything for everybody.
I remember reading the pilot. I remember I had come off of a sitcom and I had done, like, same kind of mostly comedy to that point. And I was like,
you do comedy? Because you should.
Yeah, you should too. We should too. We should do a comedy.
We should.
So I got the script and I remember them saying like the show's already on the air and like, you know, and I was like, I've never read anything quite like this. Like I was like, this is so special. It's so different. Even just at the like the first reading of it. And I was like, they want to see, like they see me as a detective, because at that point I had I had just come off this like sitcom or whatever. And I loved it so much. I just wanted to say, like, at that point, I feel like most people had sort of put in a category of, like, you know, I'm doing sitcoms and whatever. And so I get the script, I go in and I read. And the fact that, like, you saw me for this, like, it was something I hadn't had a ton of experience with yet. I hadn't had, like, an openness of people being like, yeah, I see her as a detective. Granted, I know it's still a comedy and it was lighter. It was, like, the perfect, probably the, it was the perfect thing. But it was also, like, a rare. It was just, I feel so lucky.
When you were 18, too, which was weird.
I do feel like that. I look back at the episodes, I'm like, who is that? I look so young. And like, I remember at first being like, oh my God, I feel weird saying this now. Cause I was like, yeah, of course I'm a detective, whatever. I felt like I was like dressing up in my dad's suits a little bit. Like I was like, I did. There were a couple times I put on the suits. I'm like, is anyone buying this?
A recurring theme was, hey Maggie, where's your gun? Exactly. Because you weren't wearing a gun at the time.
That's still a recurring theme. Like,
why is this cop not wearing a gun?
Yep. Yeah, like, the gun just appears. It's in my bag. It's in my bag.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the guns ruin everybody's clothes. Like if the guy has like this nice suit on and then there's this bulge where this gun is. And it's like, you know, and it's so it's always like, yeah, they have it. You just don't see where it is. It's very streamlined.
Except for Tim, who.
Yeah, I know. Insisted.
Always. No, but it's true. You were like, you were authentic. Not that I wasn't, but I definitely was more like, okay, how does this look? Does this look okay? Just that, so you know.
Just can't play cops and robbers without a gun.
It's true. Over the course of talking about Psych on this podcast, what I kind of want to share is this part of it where I feel like people who came up to do the show, word of mouth, I think got out pretty fast that like, we have fun. We were so good at like we just, that's what we were about. like fun. It was like, you come up, we have a good time. We show you a good time. We all played, we partied, it was all about that. And so having people back, people always, I feel like, wanted to come back. And like, I don't know, I like look back now over the time, I'm like, man, this was something else. Like, it was so special. It was one of those things that I actually do feel like, you know, when you look at something and you think like, man, I wish I knew at the time, like how good I had it. And then like you think back and you're like, man, I think we actually did know like how special it was. Like, we knew every day that we got to all be together. We knew every day, every episode, every season we got picked up. Like, we didn't even, like, we loved it so much. I think most of us at that point, other than Dulay, had never had a second season of a show ever. Okay, so I'm going to let you all go because I will just talk all day. And I feel like I still have a gazillion. I just want to hear all of it, everything. I love this so much. Thank you so much for sharing everything. And the psychos are going to love it.
Tim, we started with 40 minutes of Disneyland stories, so you'll be excited to
hear all of that. That were amazing, but it's all part of you and where all this came from, and it's perfect. It's all perfect.
I can't wait to watch this episode.
It's going to be great, and Tim, you were awesome, and Maggie, you were spectacular. You were born to do this.
Okay.
And,
Thank you, Steve. All right. Thank you all. Love you guys.
Goodbye.
Bye. That was such an incredible talk with Steve. Loved it so much. Thank you all for listening to our first episode of The Psychologists Are In. We are beyond excited to relive all of our favorite parts of psych with you all. Our favorite parts being all of them. And we'd love to hear from you. So please feel free to message us on our Instagram at The Psychologists Are In, our Twitter at Psychologist Pod with any questions about the show. And while you're at it, follow us on TikTok at The Psychologists Are In. I am still getting used to TikTok. I have not used TikTok, but I'm going to get great at it for this podcast. Anyway, see you next week where we will be talking to James Rode Rodriguez, Sean Spencer himself. We get into some really good stuff. You do not want to miss it. Bye.